Hello everyone, welcome to LTV Talks. Today we have Maya from Adapti with us. Maya is an IT product manager at Adapti and comes with a strong background on technical know-how on how the platforms and app developers can get most out of their apps. So Maya, welcome to the show.
Hey, hello guys. I'm so excited to be here. Let's start.
Awesome. So Maya, what do you do at Adapti and what is Adapti actually? Maybe to begin things for people who might not know the tool, could you give us a brief introduction on what the tool does?
As we say, Adapti is a revenue management platform for in-app businesses that helps to increase conversion into purchases and to grow LTV. I think LTV is everywhere, and we also work with it. Yeah. Just a couple of words maybe about my role. So I actually had like wide experience before this role. So I was a marketing director, was a technical project manager, and I'm really happy that as a product owner in Adapti, I can use all my experience to make products really powerful from the technical part and from the perspective of how we speak with our customers and how we really understand their needs. Because actually, a lot of our customers, they have strong needs in expertise in developing business, in unit economy, and in these also not only technical fields. And so I'm feeling really comfortable in this role. And this is just a short introduction, who I am and what can I share with you.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it'll be very interesting to have your thoughts on this podcast today, because we've had a lot of people who are acting as consultants, and then we've had a lot of people who are working in the field more on the client side. But it's always interesting to get the perspective on how the tools are working and what's your level of insights, because I feel like you have this umbrella of app developers that you are seeing on a daily basis, which sometimes we don't get to see or work with, right? So, and also coming from a technical background, I think just getting your perspective on what you choose to build and how you choose to build it, things like that would be super interesting for, I think, everyone who listens to this podcast. So thanks again for joining. Maybe to get things started, right? Like I remember reading this article on, I think it was TechCrunch, where they mentioned how mobile developers earned more than $260 billion on Apple's App Store between its launch from 2008 to 21. And yet, you know, be it Apple or Google, they don't provide an easy way for companies to maximize how much they make from their apps, right? And that's where I feel a tool like Adapti comes into the role, right? So you allow people to have, let's say, to monetize better in terms of, is it just A/B testing of paywalls, or are there more things in your suite that that helps app developers make more money out of their apps?
Well, actually, I should say that we have like several layers in our product. So the first one is technical, and it's like a historical level because it's where everything started when our founders, they created a system for themselves, and actually they started to like provide the same service for some of maybe someone they knew, and then it spread it like naturally. So that's how it all started, from the technical layer. So just having SDK that handles all the questions regarding subscriptions, so you don't need to think what will be with, you know, currencies, taxes, and billing issues, and some grace periods. So you have everything covered. It's just the start, yes. Then when you have these bases, you can work actually with the events that you receive there. And here we go to analytics, and we have like advanced analytics with all funnels, conversions, and it's really important to have this data directly from the purchases. So we handle them and we have this data like directly. And of course, you can work with this analytics just isolated about your purchases, but you can connect different integrations with MMP and see some trends, how your acquisition works, for example. So we have attributions from our integrations, and we can do it like both sides. So you can see in adaptive attributions from other systems, and if you work in some other system, you can get our events there to see all the whole picture there. Yes, and now we come to A/B testing. Yes, it's like the most sweet part, I think, for all the product managers. So really like it. When we're working with some real numbers from customers' behavior. Yes, because we are working with people, with a real psychology of the people, and we can get more if we understand them better. And yes, A/B testing is the next powerful level when we can get some truth and to get more from mobile application based on these facts. So it's like, in short, how it all works.
That's awesome. And so I had like two follow-up questions there, right? Like one is around, for example, you mentioned how you can have all of these insights within the tool. And so, for example, if I'm an app developer or if I'm a, let's say, a product manager, and we'll come to that part a little bit later. But what was sort of missing in the last couple of years that now is possible, right? Like how what has changed in the last years because of which a tool like Adapti becomes very prominent or very necessary for an app developer to have? You know, because I guess what I'm getting at is there were all these major subscription apps which were which have been there for so long. So was there always this gap, and why is it only now that we are seeing this level of metrics or this level of, let's say, people trying to look into these insights more often, you know? So what has changed in the last years that wasn't there before?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And I think there are like several aspects here. So, of course, the first thing I should mention is something technical. Yes, that now you should have a confirmation from user that he is ready yet to share information. I'm speaking about Apple infrastructure, of course. And for example, I worked a lot in e-commerce, and in e-commerce, it's so easy. It's you and your customer, and the flow is transparent. And here you have actually the third party. I'm calling it the third party, Apple and Google, but actually they're like really important players in this game. So actually, it seems that you are selling in your application, but actually you are selling in stores. So your application is in App Store or at Google platform, and you are selling at their platforms, which means they can influence, they have moderation, and you need to play according to some rules. And of course, there is some barrier that you should handle developing some infrastructure to organize all purchasing information and to get this information and to deal with it, actually. So I think that this is the first reason, just like technical reason. I think that the second reason is about the organic growth of mobile market. So we see that mobile devices are everywhere, like in every corner of the planet, and everyone can download applications. A great impact that lockdown brought here, because everyone couldn't go anywhere, and all the entertainment, all the services, they came like from this small gadget, yeah, and it was like a window to the whole world actually, and people were ready to spend money that they had spent before like somewhere offline. They are ready to spend it in their mobile applications, and I think it's like one of the boosts for this market also. And we can also speak about the availability of technologies and the growth of the amount of developers actually. So now we see like a wide range of different types of people who start to develop mobile applications. So there are amateur developers, there are professionals, there are like high level professionals who participated in development like dozens of applications. And it's also like a part of the growing market here. Of course, something that also boosts this growth is the spreading of internet connection. It's like another part in addition to mobile devices availability and the speed of it. Because when we have a higher speed of connection and we have our mobile device and we have like the whole our life within this small mobile device, we want it to be like well equipped and close the questions of our life and a wide range of, you know, evergreen niches. They require more and more and better mobile applications. So we see high competition here, mm-hmm. but we also have growing demand here, which means that there is a space to create more and more because the demand is also growing. So I think it's like trends of the last 2 years, but it's not something that we have today and it stopped now. It continues growing and we need like, yes, I like to say we need to run fast to remain at the same place. Yeah.
Here. Absolutely. Yeah, so, you know, to basically summarize, right, like what I see you mentioning is almost like on the demand and supply side, there's first like this technological layer that has been improved and that sort of gives us the visibility on having access to these metrics and these insights. But then at the same time, you have the demand from users sort of boosting up because of lockdown and because of mobile penetration, because of, I think even in India, for example, you have, I was reading recently that the mobile penetration rate is only at 45% right now, and it has already become one of the major users, you know, in terms of geographical areas for mobile applications. And then you have all of this rising very quickly in across the world. So even the developers on the other side, you have more and more developers trying to create apps, very niche apps as well, right? Like there are some apps, I recently came across an app which was basically connecting surrogate parents with each other, which to me sounds like such a specific niche use case, but there is still an app out there, you know, for serving users who might need that service. So one thing I was curious about is like, because of all these developers coming into the market, like using tools like Flutter to create really quick apps, right? Is are there more clients that you see using Adaptee which fit into this criteria that, you know, because I'm an app developer who's recently started their app, I want to make sure that my monetization strategy is in place so that I can stay afloat and make sure that I make enough money from the product that I've created? Or is it the case that you reach a certain stage of maturity in terms of your product market fit, about your users, etc., and then you choose to go for a tool like Adaptee? You know, so what does your typical clientele look like, and what do you think is a good stage for an app to start considering a tool like Adaptee, for example?
Well, you know, we speak about within our company, we speak about this so much, really, you know, all these marketing things about the portrait of our client, yeah, and we are discovering this. And it's really interesting to see the variety here, because, for example, we have a lot of developers who just start their way, and they have their first application, and they want just to be safe with all this monetization, yet not to go there for some challenges deeply about purchasing, that they want to be sure that everything will be covered there. And it's just one of the many types of clients that we have. Yeah, and actually we have like different pricing options, of course, for different types of clients, and different functionality included in different plans. So these type of clients, they are mostly interested in technical solution. And of course, they may see also analytics to analyze how everything is going. They can see events feed just to be sure that everything goes okay. Yeah, but maybe they don't need on that stage some advanced advanced tools, because, for example, to run an A/B test, you need some amount of traffic. To make some, you know, to get some valid results. Yes, and here we also try to be more transparent with different kinds of clients, how our A/B testing is working. And now we are preparing for like version 2 of our A/B tests. Like, they will be really improved for with more transparent ways for even those clients that who are not that experienced with that, you know, it's like next step here. So you may like test easily without even, it's hard to say without thinking, yeah, but you shouldn't be that that experienced, yeah, really, to use our A/B test. So we are going that way, but in fact, you really need some audience to start that experiment and to go in more advanced things. And when we take a look at some clients who are not new in this business, I should say that most of them have teams already. And they have different roles, and we speak with people with different expertise, so we can dive deeper with the product owner or analytic person in our cohorts and discuss how it's better to use them, or speak about our prediction models and all that math behind that. Or about A/B testing also, because A/B testing is also about maths. And if you just not sure in the model that is behind the calculation, you may have like questions. So we are discussing it also with our clients. So how we will calculate all that. And for example, some owners of the businesses, they're not really interested in some maths or something. They want just to see results. And for them, it's better to see like some dashboards, like, for example, funnel or our conversion charts, just to see how it's all going. Yes, so I described really different people now. And they all have different points of view and different approaches. And it looks like we try to speak their language in all the cases. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I understand. It's such a wide market, right? Because you have almost, you can divide the market on based on the maturity of not only the apps, but also their teams and the culture there, maybe also in terms of their proficiency to run A/B tests, knowing what they are going to get into. I've had definitely clients on both the spectrum, and I see, and I'll be very keen to get your thoughts on this as well. But for example, I very clearly see when I'm working with an indie app developer, to your point, there's always this notion that, okay, let's start seeing some results. And oftentimes they want to A/B test without having the volumes for it. Whereas with the bigger clients, the problem or the typical issue is that they want to move slowly because they have hit a good level of conversion rates, etc. And they are very careful about what they want to launch. So you, with them, you might even launch one A/B test per 2 or 3 months, but then that has to be very impactful, right? So I'll come to that a bit in a bit, but let's break this down, right? So for example, within these different client personas that you have, what is a typical team structure? Like if you describe from the indie app developer to, let's say, a very developed app, who in these organizations is owning a tool like Adapti and owning the topic of monetization or subscription optimization? Is it, how does it vary from, let's say, an indie app developer who has just started their company versus someone who's very organized and, let's say, has already a brand name attached to it?
Yeah. I think that really inspiring thing that I think it's like an advantage of the time that we are living today is that the barriers, they are like gradients. So sometimes the roles may be not that strictly separated. So we can see, for example, business owner. So he is about business, but he is developer. And you can divide these two. So you see both at the same time. I should say that I see the trend that there are a lot of attention to the growth. And we have growth managers. Not all the teams have these growth managers. Not all the teams call them growth managers. So we may see a marketing manager, but he is doing almost the same that growth manager does or product manager does. But we sometimes see that clients have growth teams. So it means that it may be acquisition manager, maybe business owner, and maybe product manager. So they call themselves like growth team, and they develop together some solutions, and they make all these numbers together. So such approach of really teamwork with like equal impact. So they decide together. So we have such models. I should mention that there are a lot of models like classical with just product owner and who is responsible for A/B testing. So I should mention this. So it's not like completely a crazy market with no rules. Yes. So I think that the classic option is to have product who is responsible for A/B testing. And we can see in this like classic approach, we can see like the team is sitting and developer is asking questions from his part. And like at the end of the meeting, he may say like, okay, actually it was all this meeting was just for sure, our product manager who is interested in this A/B testing and improvements. Yes, so we would like the system and we are just asking to be sure that this system will work fine. So they are just to be sure that everything is reliable and all that. But in general, they are focused on the product goals. So there are some variants, some options, and we really see different types. And if we speak about I just would like to add to your previous question, when we spoke about different scale of the businesses, I may just share some example how people test in different on different level of the application, maybe a different step of the life cycle of application. So, for example, when growth manager is sharing his need in experiments at the beginning, it's like, okay, we would like just to find the best price. So we are trying everything. Yeah, we just need to understand to figure out what how to sell. Yeah, so we are searching the market fit. We're searching like our best prices, and there are a lot of fast experiments on that stage, and they are like pretty simple. So they are not ready to try, you know, some complicated animations on payroll and something really advanced, but they need to figure out, yeah, to check some hypotheses fast. And it's something at the beginning at the scale of small. Yeah. So it's like small application that starts. And we see huge application with long history and a lot of data, historical data, and opportunities to get some conclusions based on this data, actually. But still, they do experiments. So they launch, so they have maybe more resources, and they launch like maybe 20 paywalls, and they have like funnel of testing different approaches and hypotheses. So they test a lot, then they have like finalists of their competition, and then they select the best performing paywalls. And this happens actually at the scale of a huge application with a long history. So here it's like positive examples I like to share, you know, successful examples. Yeah,
absolutely. I think that that's another important point, right? Just before I get into the A/B testing bit, within the team structure, and you mentioned like there's always this growth manager, marketing manager, or sort of product manager, typical roles. I know they're called, especially in Berlin, there you have 1,000 names for exactly these three roles. And you know, it can vary from someone doing just email marketing to someone doing everything or being like an extension of the product team as well. So it's kind of a gray area to put a pin on a role itself that manages a tool like yours. But for example, how often do you see this person, whoever is handling the tool or the ownership of the tool, sit in a product team versus sit in a marketing team? Do you see, for example, way more people in the product team using the tool, or do you see more and more marketing folks trying to use the tool and generate impact while they report onto the product? Because eventually I imagine that these metrics are owned by the product teams. What kind of split do you see there?
I can say that I see a lot of, marketing is too wide, let's say acquisition. Mm. Yeah. I can say that there are a lot of acquisition people using our tool like directly as it is designed to use, because we can have attributes from marketing systems, but it's more natural for marketing guys to use marketing systems and to receive our events there. So they mostly use their like MMP and receive events there and have their conclusions there and work with that. We see growth managers and product managers and business owners also and analytics in our system. And all those who love calculations, because those guys, I just see, fire in their eyes when they work with cohorts, all these conversions or something. They're like, well, and more metrics. I want to see everything. Yeah, these guys just enjoy this usage. Yeah, mostly.
Awesome. You're describing me, by the way, because I am like that to my clients as well. I remember once working with a client and, with the dashboarding, you get the top level metrics, right, in terms of conversion rates and things like that. And I remember wanting to dive so much deeper into you know, platform differences, geographical differences, etc., that I used to ask for manual exports on this kind of data, just to even using my weekends to analyze the data. So I'm not proud of it, but the, you know, you're definitely describing my persona as well.
I understand you.
And my two cents on the team structure, by the way, like I feel one, you know, I've worked with several clients on similar engagements on subscription optimization, and I feel the one that has worked brilliantly for me was being an extension to the product team. So you're all, they called me the subscription optimizer in the team, whereas I was the CRM guy, and I was responsible for sort of being that bridge between marketing and product, whereas the product team had a very clear vision on where they wanted to go. So they were helping me feed all those user insights and what sort of complaints they are receiving, what sort of tactics they want to, let's say, prioritize in terms of their goals. And I was kind of responsible to bring my not only marketing expertise, but then also subscription, because it gets very messy quickly, right? Like as soon as you realize that how powerful these tools are, things get very messy very quickly. You want to test everything, and you need to have a calm head to say, okay, I'm going to just, you know, I need a roadmap. So it was super nice because they were sort of responsible for the roadmap, and it was a collaborative effort where they would say, okay, these are the priorities, and these are some of the tests that we have in the wish list, let's say. What do we want to prioritize for this month? And we went from there. So, and every time I was responsible to feeding the CRM team or the marketing teams with all the events and things like that that might come into their system, which they can potentially use. And then I became the role of the product folks within the CRM team, where I was feeding them the insights that we were having on the paywall and the subscription optimization bits, and then working with them to generate more ideas on how we can use it for marketing. I feel that was super effective way of working, and we got so much done in very little time. But that being cool. And so, you know, I want to talk a little bit on A/B testing that you mentioned, right? Because, and I have a very specific doubt here. It might be my doubt that I'm solving with this question, but I always have this doubt where, you know, when you start off being an app developer, you have, let's say, very less volumes of people coming in. Typical journey is that you start spending on acquisition, you start doing, you know, things to make your product better, and slowly this gains traction. Now, when you're testing things like pricing and you're going aggressively to test things like placements, where should we place these paywalls, etc., in the initial stages, the idea is to get the maximum exposure to your users and trying to get in front of them, or getting a paywall in front of them so that they can interact and hopefully buy your app. When you move into a more advanced stage, pricing becomes a very sensitive topic, right? I almost somehow feel that you only have certain time window before you can play around with these things like pricing and sometimes even design, right? And then once you gain a specific amount of traction of users, you are almost not allowed to do it in the same geography. So if in the US I have grown enough and, you know, I have a price point, I have everything set up, it's almost impossible to then test those things within that market, and you have to look for opportunities elsewhere. So you'd go to a market like, which is similar to US, let's say Australia, and you'd go there and you'd try testing those things out there. So what kind of A/B tests are people running from, you know, from that app developer's level to, let's say, a level where you have already been established in certain markets, right? Like, what's the typical journey of A/B test that you see with your app developers? Let's say.
Yes, I should say that there are a lot of tests when they go to a new market, for example. So it may be like experienced application, big application with large traffic, but we need to start to launch at new market, and there are some testing is needed to understand better which works actually better. But still, I should say that big application, as I said before in my example, and it's not just the one in a million examples, so I see some other applications also, they test. Maybe I should add here that they not just testing sometimes on the whole audience, but they have some segments and they would like to check some hypothesis, because, for example, you may be sure that you do your best in some segment, okay, you don't touch, but I don't like this approach. I think that we should be flexible and change all the time. But anyway, let's imagine this situation. But there are usually some segments which can show better performance. So sometimes, not sometimes, actually, for big clients, it's like typical pattern to test different segments. And if this application is with a long history and with a large base of loyal subscribers, we see more experiments with some promos, some loyalty, you know, something about retention support. Yes, and some seasonal, you know, maybe offers and something like this. So we see that when we speak about A/B testing, one may think that we're speaking just about the first paywall when you have user from acquisition. But actually, maybe you and me understand it like it's obvious, but we should just mention this, that it's only the start and all the work is starting here and all the money are coming from this long tail of retention, actually. Yes, and if we speak, by the way, about large applications, so I should say that middle applications, they track 1 year plus as a like payoff, you know, like break even payoff, yeah, when the application actually starts to earn. And the larger applications, it may be like 2 years plus. Of course, it depends on the niche. It's not something, you know, like scientific exact results, but it's something approximately. So if we speak about some small application, it can be like 3 months payoff, and then they start to earn. And for larger applications, we see that there are more complicated business models. Maybe there are people who may take risks because they have experience. So they have experience and they can build this economy model, which is not that risky because they really know what they do. And when you see this person who is launching the application, invest there and knows exactly that the money will return in a year, in 2 years, it looks like really, wow, that's magic. You're so experienced, guys. And we have such clients. And maybe I should mention just one more pattern, that sometimes people sell applications. So we didn't speak about this today, but it's like, another pattern when we speak about professionals who is working with up business professionally. So sometimes it's just like raise it and sell it model.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, you mentioned, for example, this segmentation approach, right? And I wanted to go there just for a tiny bit. Could you give us examples of what that approach looks like? Is it, for example, giving all your reactivation users, let's say, a promo code that they could use, and segmenting based on engagement, let's say maybe a power user gets a discounted version, things like that? Or what do you have, and what do you typically see when you talk about these segmented approach of testing?
The most maybe thing on the surface is countries and some local, local type of speaking to the people. So when you speak to the person with like we say that English language is different in different regions even. Yeah, you should speak with people the way they understand, they trust you. Yeah, because the paywall is about trust. So it's like a frame when you should gain the trust with just one page. Yes, and it's very important to be local and to gain this really trust of users. But as I said, this is something on the surface. And if we pay more attention to working with the audience and dive deeper, we see just wide amount of opportunities there, how to work with that. Of course, there are segments based on events. So if you see that your client has some troubles with payments, you can work with him somehow. And we don't provide some, you know, push notifications and all this working with clients, but we have integrations and we send our events as triggers. So you may also work like this with this like loyalty and retention support. But if we come back to the segments, it's just, yeah, something near that. But if we speak about the segments, we can segment audiences with their behavior according to the events, with the app versions. So some part of your clients didn't update your application and they are still on the old fashioned version and doing something strange there. And you may test some new approaches there on that old fashioned guys with old version of application. And we also have the feature of custom segments. So you may create like almost everything you like. So the guys who uploaded 5 photos, the guys who did just one training. So, and here, like endless, you know, world of experiments are opened. And I think that it's really inspiring. You see a lot of opportunities here, but still we should like, stay professional and calculate everything. yeah, because when I see like huge amount of tests that our client like show us and share how they work, I see it, and the first like thing in my mind when I see like 200-300 paywalls, I think, okay, guys, so you launch like almost everything possible. But then when they describe their logic, I understand that it's, well, great math behind that. And actually, it seems that, okay, what I gain here, like 0.5% here, 0.5% there, so should I do some... is it worth some efforts to gain this like parts of the percent? But actually, you gain little by little for different audience, for different segments, and you have these great results when you work smartly with that. So yes, this is something that we see.
Absolutely. I think to your point, right, you have almost these smaller improvements, and if you can compound those small improvements, it gets very quickly to be a very high number, especially in terms of subscriptions. Like even if you get your conversion rates up from 1% to 1.2%, and then you have a boost in acquisition, it kind of supports all of your acquisition mechanism to have way higher subscriptions and way higher revenue for your apps than, let's say, 1%. So it might seem small, but then it's all improvements that are worth making. One quick question, by the way, are you also seeing in terms of monetization experiments that a lot of apps have different one-time purchases as well? Like, for example, and the reason I ask this question is because I had a client recently and we were testing annual subscriptions with like a 7-day trial, right? Like the basic model. And we tried different tactics. So we tried optimizing the pricing, for instance, at some point, which resulted in a very high increase in revenue, almost, I think, 8%. And then you had a different trial lens, but it didn't really work out for us. And then the next step that we did was very counterintuitive because we started launching these lifetime purchases. And I know that famously, for example, I think it was Headspace, which had a lifetime purchase option, which was, I think, $300 or something. And then they discontinued it. So now they don't have it anymore. And there was almost a buzz in the industry that lifetime purchases don't work. So when we implemented it, and this app developer was very keen to do it because one of his previous apps had a good amount of lifetime purchases. And I was very skeptical about it, but the day we launched it, it had way higher conversions than your annual subscription, and it was making him way more money upfront to spend then on product development, right? So is this a trend that you are also seeing within your app developers, or it's fairly, maybe it's like a one-off and not, you don't see much of that sort of hybrid pricing, so to say, in this area?
Maybe not the lifetime trend, yeah, but hybrid pricing and more experiments actually with the types of monetization and finding some creative solution and being more brave. And I think it's again about the growth of the market. So the market is growing and people find new solutions how to monetize, and actually it seems that it really works. And clients, I mean, you mobile applications users, they are ready for different. So they are already know all the basic models of mobile app monetizations, so they are not like afraid of that. And some more complicated combinations, they seem to work better with the time. And maybe I should say about annual subscriptions also that these are tricky subscriptions, yeah, for testing, especially, yes, because so you won't wait for the second payment, you know. So it's a too long experiment to wait for a year to understand if it was launching. Yes, so this. This bet this works mostly with prediction, and it depends on the model of prediction how you calculate this annual subscription. So yes, it's a kind of tricky because sometimes we see that annual subscription shows its power on the second,
Yeah.
so after a year, so it's like, yeah,
Yeah,
13
absolutely.
months.
Absolutely. And I think this tactic is also very useful for developed apps because I recently, for instance, noticed how Bumble started adding these one-off things that you could buy. Initially, it was just like a boost or maybe one or two things. I don't remember it, but more recently, I saw that they have many of these things. So they have, for example, you could know two people. I might be completely wrong about this. It might be a different app, but it was a dating app, and I think they have like so many one-off purchases that you could make that I felt that it was such a good tactic even for developed apps when you can't really play around with your pricing maybe because you've developed so much. You always have this opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to introduce this one-time purchase and sort of build up that LTV so that it's it can generate more revenue for these users who are willingly using the product, like using the product and are committed to using it as well. So super interesting. And before we jump into the roadmap, because I know we wanted to talk a little bit about that as well. One quick question on impact variation. So I read somewhere that if you compare your indie app developers and the trial rates that they get typically for their apps might not be very similar to, let's say the benchmarks that we see out there. So sometimes you see a benchmark in your industry and you feel you're underperforming or overperforming. are mostly underperforming. And when you see that, a lot of app developers get alarmed because of this insight. Whereas, I've seen this in my experience as well, that it varies so drastically in terms of the trial conversion rates between, let's say, an app that hasn't found its product market fit versus the ones that have. So how do you maybe advise your app developers to use those benchmarks and to use those metrics that they see in these subscription snapshot reports, where they're seeing that trial conversion rate should be, let's say, 20% and it's theirs is at 1%, right? Like, how do you manage those expectations, and what are you what do you see works best for them?
Well, how to answer here, like, diplomatically correct. So if we speak about Apple benchmarks, which recently launched, we prefer to speak about this as, okay, it appeared not really recently, yeah, not a lot of time has passed. So let's see. So this is our approach. So we are not that fast with recommending using it, like the source of truth, the only source of truth, and to have it as a real target, because we see for some applications that there are some questions to these numbers. For example, they may be like the cost of acquisition, which is almost impossible in some niches, just to have the same price. It's like immediate payoff. I think that we should look at them. We should compare them with different sources of truth. So we may check with the community, we may check with the colleagues. And by the way, I think that the best practice is to have friendship with competitors and to know what they think about that. Yeah, I believe in the power of the community. And in the power of real practice that is happening, and it doesn't mean that that benchmarks doesn't work, but maybe we should double check and understand how we may use it, not so directly, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree there, because it just varies so much. I think the typical impact variation between a normal app, which, let's say, hasn't hit that stride, versus an organized app, or which an app that has been there in the market for very long, could vary 20 times, right? In terms of even their conversion rates, be it trial conversion or paid subscription. So definitely, but was very keen to hear your thoughts on it. Perfect. And lastly, so I have like this quote again from one of the articles that was published about Adapti, which I can sort of read out to you and get your thoughts on it. So it's a New York City based Adapti, which hopes to help developers earn more from their apps. So far, it has been doing this mostly by powering A/B testing for paywalls, but it has a way broader roadmap. And within this roadmap, could you maybe elaborate on that? Like, what are some of the things that you're working on currently, which are exciting and which you can speak to? And also maybe with that answer of yours, it would be great to know what are some of the things that you have pushed back on, or that you have, let's say, rejected as things to build? Because maybe that gives us a very good understanding of how the how the decisions are made, and how, for example, what are some of the things that you might be rejecting as a trend that you don't foresee coming in, or as a need for your clients. Maybe your answer on that would be very interesting.
Okay. So it's hard to say that I can reject some trends, but we, of course, rejecting some feature, from the perspective of the product vision. For example, we deprecated the part regarding campaigns and push notifications that I told you, because we understand that there are services that can do it better and our clients use them. And it's enough for us to have just integration and not to go there at that part. But there are, of course, some fields that are very interesting for us. So actually, our team are mostly math guys and engineers, and we really like numbers and all that. So now we are working a lot in the direction of machine learning and predictions. And as I told you already about these annual subscriptions and also some other things that just impossible to evaluate correctly if you don't have some view in the future, Yeah. And we worked at our model for cohort analysis to have like predicted an LTV. So now we have current LTV, and we would like to predict what this or that cohort will show, on a quarter basis, on half year basis, on a year plus basis. And it was really interesting, separate project, because we created that scene that a lot of our clients, they actually doing these predictions in-house in different ways. In Excel, they collect all the data and they calculate, and they have different formulas, parameters. And it was very interesting to speak with them to know how they do this actually. And it was interesting to know how they take information for this prediction, because sometimes you have enough information like from historical data, but sometimes you have no such opportunity, and how they can use information from some other applications of the same niche, for example, if it's like really experienced developer and they have like different projects, and they can use their experiences, I told you before, to run businesses, really profitable businesses, because they can predict. So, and it revealed that actually successful businesses, they like all of them, they use predictions to understand when actually their investments will pay off, because as I said, there is very high competition in market, and you just can't wait that okay, I invest some money and then wait, okay, everything will pay off. So there is always a risk that you won't receive your money back. So you need to go there not blindly, but calculate all that. And so now we have like successful pilot with some selected clients with these predictions, and we will see it in our cohort analysis. So you can see current LTV and predicted LTV, and select the period that you would like to see. And actually, from the pilot project, we understood that different types of clients are interested in different periods of prediction at. And it was really interesting also. So that short-term prediction and long-term prediction, it is not always just strictly correlates with the duration of subscription. So even with monthly subscriptions, some applications, they prefer to take a look at 13 months. So what they will get after a year, and they have this as a target, and they don't, target quarterly. So it's just different approaches, but they exist. And so that's why we had like several options with different periods.
And what within this article, I also remember that it mentioned how the team thinks it's now better placed to predict LTV than app owners themselves. And on that note, I would love to understand like what goes into this prediction model without you giving out, of course, the secret sauce for it. But is it, for example, not only your data that is being used to create these predictions? Is it also, for example, using the recent data from all the other apps that might be using or are on a similar stage? Or what kind of variables go into this prediction model that you think maybe even with, for someone who doesn't have the LTV prediction model, what are some of the variables that they should be thinking a lot about?
So I'm not that expert to tell you everything about the actual model. Yeah, so luckily I can tell you something like that. As we created everything together, and I needed also to dive deeper in the way we do all this, I can say that we are mostly built our prediction based on the historical data of this particular application. And if we understand that there is not enough data, then we mix with the industrial information from experience of other applications that we have, like unpersonalized. So it's possible. And when we speak about the parameters that are used there are like a list of parameters like current LTV and country, and I maybe won't go deeper in this, but we have like a list of different parameters that can impact in this, and probably the main number that we see as a result of this huge work is that at the end we achieved like less than 10% accuracy, which was like miracle for me because I didn't understand at the beginning how can we do this, because in some period people have like more promo campaigns and more traffic, in other period they have less, and how we can predict all that. But actually when we capture some trends that may be seasonal, for example, it really works like with less than 10% accuracy, which seems really cool.
Yeah, that's I guess you mean less than 10% of inaccuracy, more than 90% of accuracy, I hope. No, that's incredible. And I remember building such a model for one of my clients. I don't know how successful it is because I didn't get to work with them for very long. But the model that we had in place also used their price points. So we kind of looked at the benchmarks with and apps in the same industry which were around the same price point, and we had, as you said, right, in the power of community, so we definitely were asking around, and we saw that we had this number which we wanted to hit based on all those price point and the competitive index that we had. Plus we had this very cool variable that I was very proud of, which was also like your GDP per capita comparison between different countries. So what we did was also look at, for example, what's the spending parity in US versus, let's say, a country like India, and how would your subscriptions pan out. At some point it got too complex for me to handle on my own. So their data analysts looked at that model, and I hope that they are still using it in the company. But that was our manual attempt to do what this feature actually promises to do way more conveniently and smoothly, I hope. So
great, then you understand my feelings. Yeah.
You know, I think this was mostly all my questions that I wanted to ask you today, but is there anything else that you would like to mention that we missed out on within, I think now we've hit an hour mark, so anything that we missed out on that you feel that we need to mention?
Well, actually, I think we covered a lot of things related directly to subscriptions and even more about some global trends even. So I really enjoyed the conversation, and I just maybe would like to wish all the people who is listening it be brave and smart and curious. I think when we're curious, it all pushes forward, and we understand better our clients, because we, of course, like to calculate numbers, but we keep in mind that behind the numbers, there are real people, there are real loyalty, and I think that this approach is really the key of the success. Yeah, that's it.
Wow, that's awesome. Be brave, be curious, and be smart. Yeah. That's a very nice note to end this on. And thank you so much, Maya, for joining. Is there any way that you'd want people to reach out to you, or maybe if they want to know more about Adaptee, where can they find you and resources to get in touch with you?
Okay, I think Adaptee.io is the direct road to us. Yeah, you can reach out, you can write us directly in the window in the corner of the website. Yeah, so we are open and we are ready to speak about our product like endless
all the time,
but you can book just a short demo for a start. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Maya, for being on this call. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I hope everyone does
too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.